the message today is, don't want stuff, okay? We're going to be preaching on the 10th commandment, all right? You shall not covet. So, it says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. That is Exodus 20, verse 17. So what's covet mean? It's not a word we normally use in our day-to-day conversations, right? According to Webster's Dictionary, covet means to want something intensely. Not just want it, but to want it intensely. Now, the second half of that, this isn't really the definition of the word, but it goes along with it. It's usually taken as to want something that belongs to someone else. Right? That's not technically the definition. Technically, the definition is to want something intensely. The way it's normally used in the English language is to want something intensely that belongs to someone else. All right? So we're going to cover both sides of that actually today, and I hope that it helps you guys out. So what we're going to it says, just don't want something intensely, especially something that belongs to somebody else. That's all you guys got to do, right? That's all you got to do. So if you think you can do that, we're done. Message is over. Nope, not so fast. We can't do it. We can't do it as humans. Why can't we do it? Because God, in his infinite wisdom, has put a desire in our hearts to want. But what he put a desire in our hearts to want and to long after and to covet, to want intensely, is a close and continuing relationship with him. All right? So I'm going to tell you a little story from my Navy days. And the way this is going to relate is, it sounds really easy to go, just don't want stuff. You know, that's pretty easy. Okay, good to go. Got it, preacher man. Let's roll. Not so fast. When I was in the Navy, I was an engineer on a LST, and it was diesel-powered. And the diesels that I worked on were humongous. They were like twice the size of my pickup truck. Just to give you an idea how big these things were, I got a picture of me leaning up against one, and it's 4 or 5 feet taller than I am, and there's 6 feet of it below the deck plate that I'm standing on. 16 cylinders, 677 cubic inches of volume per cylinder. It was massive. It had 185 gallons of lube oil and 310 gallons of coolant. Can you imagine a 310-gallon radiator? It would take the stage up, right? These things were massive. So I tell you that to give you a little bit of perspective. They had huge water-cooled turbochargers on them, right? And the turbochargers went bad on a regular basis. So you had to disconnect all these flanges and stuff. And once you got the turbocharger completely disconnected, according to the tech manual, it says, simply remove turbocharger. That's what the tech manual said, simply remove turbocharger. Well, the turbocharger weighed 450 or so pounds. It was suspended 4 feet over your head, and you were standing in a little spot that you could barely turn around in. Let me assure you, there was nothing simple about moving that turbocharger, because you made one wrong move, you got crushed, you were a dead man. But according to the tech manual, snap bang, simply remove turbocharger. That's kind of like the way it is with this. Just don't want stuff. Sounds really easy. It's not quite so easy to do. So we're going to hit a couple of different aspects of this. So can we do it? Is it possible not to want stuff? We'll see. Is it against our nature? Good question. How do we know whether it's against our nature or not? Can we overcome this desire? What does the Bible tell us about it? Where's the first documented act of covetousness? Oh, by the way, covetousness, That's a word. Yeah, because I got chastised yesterday because I was making stuff up to put in the sermon, and I'm like, no, I didn't make it up. It actually is a word. And does this covetousness relate to any of the other of the Ten Commandments that we've already studied about? First off, it is possible to overcome this. It's not a bridge too far. You can get there. God doesn't give you anything or tell you to do anything that's completely impossible for you. Now, having said that, it might be impossible for you individually. But if you rely on the Lord, nothing is impossible. He puts things in your way, the things that you can't overcome, in your path, so that you don't have a choice. You have to rely on Him, or you fail. That's done by design. Because when we think we can do it on our own, guess what our reaction is? What our go-to move is? We do it on our own. He's trying to tell us, you can't do it on your own. So this is not exactly easy, but it is possible. So it is against our nature not to want, not to covet. Jeremiah 6:13, tells us this. Because from the least of them, even to the greatest of them, everyone is given to covetousness. And from the prophet, even to the priest, everyone deals falsely. So, it is in our nature to want. It's also against our nature not to want, but that doesn't make it impossible. All right? As I said, we're born to want. We're born to have this hole in our life that only gets filled by God and a relationship with Him. Now, on a regular basis, we turn away from that and we try and look inward and we try and use our own power to make everything happen our way. But there's still this hole. And misplaced desire is where some bad stuff happens. All right? That's where we get gambling, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, indebtedness, financial problems, marital problems, dependency. Why do we have these things? That's not God's kingdom. That's not his thing. So why do we have these? Right? We have them because we start chasing the new shiny. And I'm going to explain the new shiny. Right? That's something that in the shooting circles we hear a lot. Because everybody's always chasing the latest and greatest thing. So they call it the new shiny. Right? And as humans, we're kind of like a dog on a walk. So we're trotting down the trail. Everything's good to go. We know what we're supposed to be doing. We know what direction we're going in. We know why we're going there. And then a squirrel. He's going, squirrel? That's what we do. We get on the dog for it, jerk them back up by their neck, go, hey, that's not what you're here for. Yet we do the same thing. We do the same exact thing, squirrel. For me, new rifle. Right? For some of you guys, new car. No different. It's all the same thing. The want that we have in our heart is put there by God for God. That's His place. That's His little place in our heart. But it's a whole lot easier to fill that void with whatever it happens to be that we love to do or we love to own, right? So I've coined that as the new shiny. You're going to hear that several times in the message. Now here's a statement that I found really profound that I read the other day. And I want it to sink in for you. It says, It's not because we choose to divert our attention away from God. But that we fail to resist something from taking our attention away from God. Right? It's not like we're going, okay, God, back off. I got this. I want this new rifle. Right? We're not shoving him aside intentionally, but we're going, yeah. The outcome is the same. The outcome is the same. You might not have meant to do it, but the outcome is the same. Now you got the new rifle, and it's like, hey, the only day the range is open is on Sunday. I'm going to skip church this Sunday, and I'm going to go shooting, and I'll catch up next Sunday. Right? What have you done? You've gone running after new shiny, bless you. You've gone running after new shiny. So, where is the first documented account of covetousness? This is going to blow your mind. Because it's in Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. I'm going to read that to you. And then, because it doesn't actually say covetousness in this, but I'm going to explain how I got there. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has not God indeed said, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat, or you shall not touch, lest you die. Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. Verse 5, pay close attention. For God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. That's what you need to pay attention to. The first four verses was to lead you into this. The fifth verse is what we need to pay close attention to today. So how does that relate to covetousness? Eve was coveting the knowledge and the power of God. She didn't want to be like God. Just like we don't want to be like God, we want to be God. Oh my goodness, look deep into your soul and you'll know that's true. Because we want to take control. We want to take control of everything. We don't need God, we got this. Right? We want to be God. We want to have the knowledge that God has. Eve was covetous of the knowledge that God had and ate the fruit so she could be God. And we've been paying for that ever since. Now, that gets into the second side of the definition of covet, which is that which is another's. Right? Because she didn't just want the knowledge. She wanted the knowledge of God. I want what's His, and I want to make it my own. Until I wrote this sermon, I really didn't see it that way. It's kind of crazy how I learned things by doing this. But I wanted something that wasn't mine. The word covet appears 35 times in the New King James Version of the Bible, and the word want appears 116 times. Now, reading through these passages, I found something kind of interesting. All 35 instances of covet had a negative connotation to it. Every one of them. All 35 of them had a negative connotation to it. The 116 wants, less than a quarter of them had a negative connotation to it. Why do you think that is? Got to be a reason for it. God doesn't make mistakes. And as far as I'm concerned, nothing happens by chance. It's all in God's plan. And I could be off base here, but I think it's because covet means to want intensely. Not just want, but want intensely, usually pertaining to that of another. Maybe that all 35 of those negative connotation covets is because the only thing we should want with that type of intensity is a relationship with the Lord. Not saying it's true. That's just my spin on it. But it is something to think about. The only thing you should want with that kind of intensity is a relationship with God. This commandment is telling us not to covet anything that is our neighbor's. Why do you think the "it is our neighbor's" is an important part? Because if your neighbor has something, Aaron's got something, I really want it. I want Aaron's truck really bad, right? So if Aaron's got the truck and I don't have the truck, there's probably a reason in God's plan why Aaron's got the truck and I don't have the truck. So when you covet that and you go after that and you want what is someone else's, now you're telling God that His grace and His plan for your life isn't good enough. And I'm just going to take over and do it myself. I can do this. Don't need you, Lord. Got a good job. I can buy it myself. It's going to get you in trouble. So I said earlier that we were going to tie these into other commandments. If you remember, Pastor James has been teaching on all the commandments. And almost every Sunday that he preaches on a commandment, he rolls that back and he shows you how it relates to other commandments. I'm going to do the same thing. I think it's a pretty good idea. It doesn't stand on its own. What has covet got to do with any of the other commandments? Doesn't really tie in, does it? You shall not murder. Back in the 80s, and I'm dating myself a little bit, when Air Jordan tennis shoes first came out, some of us old guys remember that, right? There was a young inner city kid in New York City who literally got beaten to death because someone wanted his tennis shoes. That's unfathomable. It happened. That's not a story. It happened. They beat him to death for his shoes. The schools at that time stopped kids from wearing the shoes to school because they didn't want to incite violence for a pair of shoes. So covetousness cost that young man his life. Covetousness of a pair of shoes cost a man's life. That ties straight into you shall not murder. Second one, you shall not steal. Covetousness, stealing, sort of see how that one goes together, right? If I didn't covet something that wasn't mine, would I steal it? If I didn't covet the item, or, flip side of that, what the item could provide me. Because you don't always steal for the item. A lot of times in today's society, people steal merchandise to pay for drugs. So they're not coveting the item, they're coveting what the item can provide them, which is the drugs. Either way, covetousness ties straight into thou shalt not steal. You shall not commit adultery. Oh boy, we had a heated sermon on that a few weeks ago. If you didn't covet someone who was not your spouse, would adultery even come into play? I think not. Wouldn't even come into play. You're coveting something that is not yours. Here we go. We touched on this just a minute ago. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Come on, Jay Bird. You can't make a line to that one. Oh, but I can. We already covered it. I want to go to the range this Sunday. I want to go hunting this Sunday. Or I want to go to the soccer game this Sunday. I want to go to the concert this Sunday. Whatever your little new shiny is, whatever your new shiny is, each one of us has a different new shiny. But whatever your new shiny is, and you allow that to pull you away from worshiping the God of the universe in His house, you have now allowed covetousness and a covetous heart to get in the way of that commandment, to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Anybody guilty of that? I am. Happened not too long ago. And I'm going to tell you about that. And I was wrong. And I had very little faith, because we were moving our house. And the time was crunched, and I had to be out of the old house before I could close on it and get into the new house. And I didn't come to church because I had too much to do. I had too much to do. So I stayed home. And I cleaned the house. And I moved stuff. Where was my faith? It was in the toilet right then. I'm going to tell you that right now. There was no faith because I didn't trust the Lord to provide what I needed. And had I, the transition between those two houses might not have been quite as painful as it was, because it was painful. He taught me my lesson. I put something in front of him. I put something in front of him. And he slapped me around a little bit going, hey, I'm God. I'm a jealous God. You trust me and I'll take care of business for you. You don't trust me and you're on your own. And none of us can do it on our own. None of us can do it on our own. And here's my number one, my favorite. Applies to all the commandments. Everything. You shall put no other gods before me. Chasing that new shiny. Chasing that new shiny. I want to do this. I need to move out of my house. I'm not trusting you to take care of me, Lord. It's all on me. You're putting something in front of them. Number one commandment. Put no other gods in front of me. And every time we do that, it doesn't turn out well for us. At least it doesn't for me. And I normally get slapped around a little bit because I'm hard-headed. I'm going to tell you straight up, I'm stupid. And he slaps me around on a regular basis. But usually, after I get slapped around a little bit, I don't make that same mistake again. I mean, I make another one, but I usually try not to make that same one again. And when you put something in front of God, that is a purest form of idolatry. Ding, 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 ding. Nobody ever thinks about that either. You don't connect the dots. But it's idolatry in its purest form. And Colossians 3:5 tells us about that. Therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth: fornication, uncleanliness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. There's a connection on the dots. Again, you don't see it until you dive a little bit deeper. But that's a connection of the dots. After all this, and knowing what we know, why do we still covet? Why do we want things intensely other than a relationship with God? Why? I propose it's because there's something lacking in our relationship with God. There's something that's just not there, right? It's not because He doesn't want it there. He's waiting for us with open arms. Come to me, children. He's waiting with open arms. The only thing standing between us and Him is us and our hang-ups. and our hang-ups. We've got a lot of hang-ups. Just like in the Garden of Eden, the serpent is whispering in your ear. He's whispering in your ear daily, multiple times a day. What's he saying to you? God is not enough. Come on, Jay. There's so much more out there that you could be accomplishing if you just do it yourself. You don't need to rely on God. Just go out there and have a little ambition, son, and you can get it on your own. God just wants to hold you back. Think about it. He's got all these rules, these regulations, these Ten Commandments telling you all the crap you can't do. He just wants to hold you back. If he took away all those regulations, can you imagine where you would be? You don't need him. He's holding you back. You're smart and talented and strong. You don't need God. You can get this on your own. You can do it yourself. You don't need him. Here's a good one. Why does he have that? I work hard. I deserve that. Why isn't that mine? I want what he has. And I'm going to get it. It doesn't matter that you can't afford it. You deserve it. You deserve it. You work hard. You're a good person. You need this. I deserve it, and I'm going to get it. Right? All of those are Satan's little whispers in your ear. You know what's cool? He makes it look like you're thinking it. He's not doing it. He's not doing it. That's all you. You have complete control. Ask my wife what my definition of control is. Control is an illusion. You don't have control over anything. And if you do, you're fooling. If you think you do, you're fooling yourself. You have no control over anything. Oh, sure I do. I'm driving my car. And I have complete control over this car. I know exactly where it's going to go. If I don't turn the wheel, it's not going to go. If I don't step on the gas, it's not going to go. Yeah, that's not complete control. Do you have control over whether the guy's going to come across the median and slam into your head on, hit you at 100 miles an hour? No. You don't have control over anything. Control is an illusion. Ephesians 5:5. For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, again, covetousness, idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Wow. Bless you. You have no place in the kingdom of God. Now, do we covet? Yeah. Because we just read the scripture that said we all covet. What's the difference? How do you get around it? The way you get around it is having a personal relationship with Christ. And he covers that. He puts that blanket over you and he makes sure nothing hits you. Incoming fire doesn't hit you because he's got that blanket over you. Here's what I think we need to do. And again, this is just Jay's spin on things. We will want and desire, and yes, even covet. Even after this message, we knew this material before we came in here. We're still doing it. When we leave here, we're still going to do it. Right? The first step in overcoming all that is self-awareness. First step is self-awareness. Now it's at the forefront of your mind. You know what covetousness is. You know how it relates to other commandments. Right? You know this wants something intensely. You know that it usually applies to wanting something of another. Right? So now you can identify it. Be honest with yourself. Don't deceive yourself. Because again, Satan is a master manipulator. He loves to make you deceive yourself and think that it's all about you. Or, I can justify this. I really want Aaron's truck, but it's not because Aaron has it. It's just because, I don't know, I deserve that truck. I need it. I travel further than he does. He doesn't need a new truck. I need a new truck. Right? So, don't deceive yourself. Call it what it is. Identify it. Put a label on it. Know that you are being covetous. Right? Once you identify it, now you can start working against it. Get away from me, Satan. I'm a born-again child of God, and you have no power here. How often do you guys say that? I can't even count how many times a day I say that. When crazy thoughts come into my head, and I just chastise them. Get away from me, Satan. I'm a born-again child of God, and you have no power here. Because the only one that allows him to have power over your lives is you. That's all. If you refuse him the power, he can't do it. If you rely on Christ, he can't do it. If you let the Holy Spirit run your life, he can't do it. The only one that allows him to have power over your life is you. And trust me, I'm not up here throwing tomatoes at you. I look at this broken sinner in a mirror multiple times a day. And the reason I can tell you that is because I'm in the same place you are. A lot of ways worse. Right? So don't deceive yourself. Then ask God, ask Christ to take that desire from you and replace it with a desire for him. Lord, why am I wanting this so bad? There's nothing that I want as much as I want you. There's nothing I want as much as I want you. And if you're honest and you're sincere with that, the Lord will take that off of you. Now, if you're just lip syncing, you ain't getting too far because he knows your heart. If you're lip syncing, you're not going to get too far. But if you're honest and you ask him to take that from you, he'll give you the strength to overcome that challenge. What father am I missing in your kingdom that causes me to desire this worldly thing? I'm missing something, Father. What is it I'm missing? Why am I not content with you? Why do I want the new shiny? Why am I not content with all the beautiful blessings that you've already given me? There's always going to be something that you haven't attained. The richest man in the world, there's something that he hasn't attained. There's always going to be things of this world that you can't attain. And if you concentrate on that which you cannot attain, you're never going to be happy. You're never going to be joyful. If you turn around and look at what God has given you, and I'm talking the breakfast that you ate, the house that you're living in, the clothes that you're wearing, I'm talking down to the breath that he puts in your lungs. He has nothing to do with that. I have a strong abdomen. That's how I get my breath. No. He puts it in your nostrils, each breath, one at a time. If you concentrate on what He's given you already, you cannot help but be thankful. It's impossible. Even when I was in the desert, in the middle of nowhere, sometimes I didn't have water, sometimes I didn't have food to eat. Sometimes that was combined with enemy activity. If you look at what He's given you, you can't help but be thankful. Even in that environment, in all of that austerity, there was something He gave me that I was happy about. I was joyful for. I was thankful for. And if you do that, you're going to find it almost impossible to covet someone else's possessions. We're almost done. I want you to relate this message to the 23rd Psalm. The 23rd Psalm is absolutely beautiful. It's powerful. It's beautiful. And the only time we hear it is at funerals. Why is that? Only time you hear the 23rd Psalm is at funerals, because I'm trying to make you feel better about this guy that died. Right? Why don't we enjoy it while we're living? Why don't we live in that promise? If we live in that promise, think about how life would be. I'm going to read this. And I want you to think of every word that I'm saying and how it relates to you. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. There's your covetousness. I don't need to want anything because I have that relationship with my God. I don't need to want. I'm completely at peace. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. That's contentment, ladies and gentlemen. That is contentment. You're just hanging out, laying in the field. He makes me to walk beside the still waters. Beautiful. He restores my soul. You've got contentment. You've got beauty. You've got the fact that you don't need to want anything. And He's restoring your soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Let me tell you, that's powerful. I've walked in that valley. I've walked in that valley. And I trusted Him. And that's why I'm still here today. Not because of anything I did. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You have comfort in Him. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Does that mean you're not going to have enemies? Does that mean that everything's just going to go hunky-dory and you go skipping along down by the water's edge? No. It means you're going to have tribulations. You're going to have trials. You're going to stumble. You're going to fall. But He prepared a table for you in the midst of that where He's still going to feed you. You anoint my head with oil. What does that do? What does that mean? The kings of Israel were anointed with oil. It made them the family of God. When He anoints your head with oil, He's telling you, you're part of my family. You're a child of mine. My cup runs over with His blessings. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I love this. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now let me ask you, as we go through the 23rd Psalm, bit by bit, and you see what it contains, how can we want more than that? How can we want more than that? Everything we ever want, everything we ever need, our contentment, our happiness, our joy, is contained right there in that psalm. When you're feeling down and you're feeling kicked around and the whole world's against you, I want you to read that psalm. And I want you to think about how we broke it down. And I want you to think about what you're thankful for and how He has given us every provision that we'll ever need right there. And see if that doesn't improve your attitude, your morale, your outlook on life. It's real easy to see what you don't have. You read this and remember what you do have.